Bonjour à toutes et tous, vous écoutez First Print, votre podcast comics préféré pour une nouvelle émission du format Super Friends. C'est le podcast qui va à la rencontre des personnes qui font vivre la pop culture et la culture comics. Aujourd'hui, une petite pastille, une petite interview, mais d'un très grand monsieur, puisque nous avons eu l'honneur de discuter avec Jim Lee, le grand artiste. On va pas vous faire l'affront de vous rappeler tout ce qu'il a fait, c'est les X-Men avec Chris Claremont, c'est Batman Hush, c'est le président actuel de DC Comics, et il était de passage en France à l'occasion, à la fois d'un passage en librairie pour des séances de dédicace, pour le lancement un petit peu des festivités autour des 85 ans de Batman, et pour un panel à la Comic Con France. On s'est posé presque un quart d'heure avec lui pour discuter de l'importance des comics aujourd'hui, surtout dans un monde où les super-héros n'ont jamais été aussi présents sur les écrans. Et on vous laisse donc, après le générique, en compagnie dans cette interview qui est en anglais, mais qui est disponible à l'écrit sur comicsblog.fr et également sur notre chaîne YouTube en vidéo avec sous-titres. Si vous appréciez ce travail, il est plus important que jamais de le faire savoir. On travaille dur pour avoir ces interviews, donc n'hésitez pas à mettre des commentaires un petit peu partout, à partager surtout sur tous les réseaux sociaux. Et voilà, le générique se lance et je vous laisse en compagnie de Jim juste après.
Superpower documentary, even if we're talking about movies and TV series, comic books are still right in the front, at the center of the topic.
Yes.
Do you still think, as a publisher and as an artist, that comic books are relevant in our mass media era?
Yeah, 100%. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I do. I think absolutely. We say internally within Warner Brothers, like, the comics are the cornerstone of what we do. It establishes the canon. It establishes the immutables of who these characters are. How do we define what Superman is? What does he do? What does he not do? These are important things that we try to convey to the people that are adapting the characters into other media, because I think if you start breaking those rules, the characters become unrecognizable. And I think that's important to our fans, like who these people are, and they're fictional characters and their stories are told by lots of different people. So you can see how just through the complexity of the creation of content that a character can go all these different, almost infinite directions. And it's our job to really kind of focus and say, no, this is who the character is. This is who this character, what he represents, what they mean and signify. And that is what is the glue that kind of holds this entire enterprise together. So I think what we do is vital to this whole ecosystem that's been created, is that the characters start in publishing, they are defined in publishing, they can be adapted and modified in media, but we all have a consistent starting point, so everyone's not reinventing the DC universe left and right in different media.
What is the strength about the comic book as a medium compared to everything else?
Oh, I think it's that we are the fastest and we are the cheapest. And I'll just say selfishly, we're probably the most creative. So no, we, like you and I, can sit down and come up with an idea for a Batman story, and it could be created in, a month, 2 months. And we have an unlimited budget. We are only defined by the amount of time we have and the limits of our creativity. And that is not something that factors into any other adaptation, of the characters. They're always thinking about what is the budget, and the budget defines how big the action can be, how much action there can be. We don't have that limitation in comics. So I think we're able to freely think about what this universe could be in all aspects. And having that unbridled creativity allows us to do things that no one else can. And it gives us the most fertile sort of starting point, foundation for all the other adaptations.
Could you explain on a daily basis what's your job as a publisher for a big publishing company compared to what Murray Jevons is doing as editor-in-chief? What are the differences?
Yeah, so I interact with different elements of publishing and then as the liaison between DC Publishing and all the other parts of Warner Brothers Discovery that uses our content, primarily now DC Studios, right? So before there was DC Studios, Warner Brothers TV, Warner Brothers Films, they were all using our characters. And so there was a lot of sort of wrangling and sort of coordination involved. Now, sort of one-stop shopping with DC Studios. So that's been fantastic. So on the publishing side, really, it's about giving general direction, creative direction. So I have regular meetings with Marie Javens and the lead editorial teams where we talk about what are we doing and why are we doing it? What could we be doing going forward? What are the opportunities? Are we meeting the expectations of our readers? What could we be doing to lift sales? Or what characters should we elevate? What opportunities do we have to coordinate with our sister divisions in film or, you know, interactive games so that we can do cool collaborations together? So a lot of time spent on that. And then I think obviously you sit in a lot of You sit in a lot of business meetings with P&Ls and quarterly reports. So you're managing, you know, sort of the finances of the business as a publisher. You're also sitting in marketing meetings, talking about what trade shows are we going to do? How do we best apply the marketing money we have? And you're generally just working with the team to keep them excited and enthused about the future, figuring out what the chief strategies are for growth. How much do we spend or invest in digital versus physical product? What new lines of business should we be in, like young adult or middle reader, you know, books for different formats, for different audiences? So there's a lot of time spent looking at data, looking at market research, figuring out what we're doing, and are we doing the right thing? Are we in the right places? How much do we invest in all these different things? So there's a lot of meetings that take place just on those topics.
All right. It's been more than 10 years that we've been through the New 52 initiative.
Yes.
Since then, we also got DC Rebirth and now the Dawn of DC. Ending this year. It seems like the life cycle, the cycles are shorter and shorter in terms of attracting new readers. What do you think about that?
No, I think what New 52 was 2011. Rebirth was 2016. So that's 5 years. Dawn of DC was 23, so it's about 7 years. So, I think you probably want to look at what you're doing comprehensively across the line every 5 to 7 years anyway. I think we have some pretty big plans for next year. No, this year and next year. So I can't really divulge them, but you don't want to do it too frequently because then you sort of burn out the audience. But I think there's room for reflection every 5 to 7 years where you look at the line and say, what should we be doing? I think, you know, what we learned from New 52 is you can't go back and do really big structural changes because it's too jarring and it sort of splinters the audience. So a Rebirth, I think, was a correction to some of the New 52. Dawn of DC was sort of a soft reset where we were reintroducing new concepts without overhauling or jettisoning, you know, continuity. So I think there's other ways you can keep the fan base and the readership excited about what you do without having to go back and reboot everything, right? So that's what we talk about as well. So,
and how do you manage the balance between forging a new future for the DC universe and celebrating also the legacy of some very old heroes like Batman and Superman who are 85 years now?
Yes. Yeah. I think you see that question addressed and discussed throughout the documentary because I think if you don't push forward, you risk becoming ossified, you know, sort of becoming something, you know, very nice painting on the wall that of the past that doesn't speak to the future. And I think our mission is how do we sort of hold on to what made us special, our past, but continue to build and evolve so that we can remain relevant and grow in the future, right? And I think if you look at the pulp culture landscape, there's lots of characters that didn't do that, like Dick Tracy or The Phantom, Doc Savage, right? These are characters that were very big at the time, but did not evolve. Their worlds didn't evolve. And I think that was part, you know, that led to them sort of becoming sort of discarded or sort of thrown off this, you know, they're remnants of a past pulp culture. They're not as relevant today. So that's why we need to keep moving forward and thinking about what kind of stories are we telling? Are these stories that are meaningful to the audiences? Are we creating content that will be meaningful for the next 10, 15, 50, 100 years?
And there have been growing concerns about the use of AI in the sure. whole cultural industries. What's your position? Because you've been an artist, you're still an artist.
I've been an artist. Yes, you're right.
So what's your position about AI in comic books?
Yeah, so? I have my personal feelings about it. They don't necessarily, you know, match the company's sort of policies, but it's such early nascent days. I think the reason why we haven't gone out and said, hey, this is what we think of AI is because it is changing very, very quickly. How audiences think about AI, the commerciality of AI content, like it's too premature. And so I think as a company, we will obviously formulate a policy. And also we're part of a much larger entertainment company. And obviously you want the policies and the way AI is used or used at all to be consistent across the company. So it's not just us deciding what to do with AI. But as an artist, personally, I was there when Napster came about, and the film industry is much, much larger than the comic book publishing industry. Once that technology is out there, it's really hard to put that genie back in the bottle and basically say, we can't do that. And there are a lot of people online, they're saying like, I reject everything with AI. And they're saying it on phones created and owned by companies that invested a lot of money into AI. So it's a little ironic to me that everyone's trying to hold back these kinds of advances. But you know, if you look at the world around, it's moving at warp speed towards the future. I think what is critical is that there needs to be credit. So if AI is drawing upon pre-existing work, and that's how it works, there should be credit and there should be compensation for that. And so I think there's a legal component that will take some time to develop and get approved and accepted by everyone. But I think that's the next step that has to happen before widespread commercial use of AI happens. Because if in the absence of that, I think you are going to displace a lot of creatives while stealing their content, essentially, at the end of the day. But I also say, look, we live in a world where people are stealing content left and right. I mean, piracy and even before piracy, you know, people just sort of swiping other people's art styles, copying, tracing photographs, right? So it's just on steroids. AI is on steroids, how quickly it can move and how much it can basically pull in from divergent sources, right? So I think there's a big legal component as well as an ethical component, as well as a social component of, is this right or not? I can definitely see a world where there's AI content and it's labeled AI content, and then there's personal analog, you know, produced by human content, and people can make the decisions of what they want to do. I think in the United States, there's and I don't know if they have this here, but if you use genetically modified food, right, there's a label that signifies that. So consumers understand what they're getting. I think there's a danger. It's unethical, I think, to as an artist to say, hey, I've created this. This is my work when I used an AI engine to create it. So these are the kinds of ethical questions that need to be raised. We need to have laws and agreement about it. So I think we're just in very, very early days. But answers will emerge. That's my short answer. Yeah. So
Sorry. Oh. No, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.